Hello, and welcome to Social Design Insights, the podcast that brings you the leading voices of the social design movement from the fields of architecture, engineering, planning, art, and whoever else we can find that's out there trying to make the world a better place. I'm your host, Eric Hessel. We've got a fascinating show coming up, and as we continue to explore this question about who designs the designers, Els van der Plas joins us from the Dutch National Opera and Ballet, where she has served as director since 2012. However, I didn't just invite Els onto the show to talk about that. I also asked her to join us because she was the founder director of the Prins Claus Fund in the Netherlands. The Prins Claus Fund, if you don't know, is an international development organization and prize that is awarded for culture and development. It has been awarded to dancers, artists, cartoonists, and architects. In some ways, it shares a lot with the Curry Stone Design Prize, although it predates our efforts by several years. If you're ever in the need for inspiration, just head to the Prins Claus Awards list of winners. You can find that on their website or on Wikipedia, and you'll find dozens of remarkable practitioners that are all changing the world in profound ways. She began that effort in 1997, around the time that this current wave of social design thinking was starting to gain traction on both sides of the Atlantic. I thought that Els would be able to give us a perspective along the long arc of social design and its supporters, and how that relationship has evolved. And man, was I right. In this interview, Els is going to be talking about her 14 years at the Prins Claus Fund, as well as her time at the ballet and other roles that she's played. We're going to try and zero in on motives and how institutions like the Prins Claus Fund are constructed and maintained, and reflect a bit on how that influences the work that we all do. But she says it a lot better than I do, so let's get to the interview. Els, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure, absolutely.
I'm glad you were able to join us generally, but also specifically for this segment. We've been asking who designs the designers. You know, what is the sort of ecosystem of, you know, educators and curators and cultural producers around the field of social design, and how have they contributed to the shaping of that field? And In my mind, you know, the Prins Claus Fund and the Prins Claus Awards loom large in terms of the way they've shaped the conversation about social design and public interest design. And, you know, the sort of things we've chosen to look at and the sort of things that we've chosen to advance. So I was wondering if you could take us back in time. Obviously, the prize and the fund has been going for a while. Could you take us back in time to the inception of the Prins Claus Fund? What were the early discussions about how that was set up and what it was aspiring to do?
The fund started in 1996. It was a present to Prince Claus, who then was the husband of our queen, and who did a lot for Development Corporation and Foreign Affairs in the Netherlands. So he was an advisor to them. And he actually always said people are not developed, but they develop themselves. So that was a sort of starting point for him. And when we set up the Prins Claus Fund, it was really a new fund, and it was called the Fund for Culture and Development. We really wanted to focus on culture and not so much on development aid. It was really a cultural fund, and Prins Claus really wanted people in there that really, you know, knew about art and they were experts in the field of culture and the arts. And for us, the tagline became actually culture is a basic need. From that tagline, we developed actually all the programs. First of all, we, of course, made very clear that if you look at the world, culture, the arts and design, of course, and fashion and habits is all very important for a human being and for the development of a human being. That was the starting point of the whole process. And when you look at what the Prins Claus Fund did or supported, we always looked, of course, at the quality of design or the quality of the artist or the quality of the architecture or whatever, but there was always a link to the social impact of that work or of that product of that person or of that organization. So social impact, or maybe you could call it an engaged attitude, was always very, very important. If you look at that, of course, design and fashion and architecture or the makeup of a society is, of course, very interesting and important. And what always was part of that policy was the fact that we understood very well that culture or the arts were also linked to beauty and aesthetics. So it was a sort of combination of starting points for us, and then we made our selection.
One school of thought would say that, you know, all art and architecture is intrinsically impactful. You know, you can't make a piece of art, you can't make a building without it having some sort of social impact on whatever is going on around it. How do you make a determination between what is just having a sort of ordinary effect on its surroundings and something that's genuinely impactful in the way that the winners of the award usually are, always are?
Yeah, well, it's true. It's absolutely true what you're saying, that architecture and the arts, of course, are inherently impactful because also beauty, or just enjoying beauty, has an impact on a human being or on a society. So in that sense, we also looked at good art, if you want, or good design. But if you look at the track record of the Prins Claus Fund, we always focused on people that did something special for society. So, for example, somebody like Simon Velez, the Colombian architect who worked with bamboo, stood out not only because he was a good architect and his work looks wonderful, but also because he contributed so much to the environment and to actually poorer countries where bamboo was a cheap product or construction tool. So we always looked at all the aspects together. So it's not only social impact, but it's also good design and it's also aesthetics. I think that made the award or the products or the projects we chose so strong.
You know, you keep revisiting these words about beauty and aesthetics and that sort of thing. And, you know, it would seem that in the world of international development and international aid, the general business of helping people, beauty and aesthetics are often the first thing to go, right? I mean, we sort of make the excuse that in order to be, you know, more efficient or to provide more help, we have to set aside this thing. Have you noticed any change in the field? I mean, the Prins Claus Fund has really been a leader in terms of the counter argument that, you know, beauty and aesthetics are absolutely necessary and they're part of the fabric of human existence. So we have to celebrate it. Do you see the sort of wider field getting the message finally?
Yeah, well, I think I was always convinced of that, but it's very difficult to prove. And I think when we started the Cultural Emergency Response Fund, we wanted to rescue, if you want, culture or cultural heritage after a disaster or after a conflict. And that was actually a sort of Red Cross for culture. That project or program helped us also to collect evidence that people want their aesthetic surroundings or their cultural heritage to be restored because they relate to it and they get joy out of it or they get an identity out of it. So beauty is not only an aesthetic concept, it's also about who you are and where you come from. I see always beauty in a sort of broad sense, and not only in a sense like do you like it, you know, do you think it's beautiful. But that program, the Cultural Emergency Response Fund, sort of gave us the arguments really to say, okay, you know, when we saved the Bactrian gold from the museum in Kabul, Afghanistan, we got so many people that were so happy that we did that. And they were so proud of that collection because it was their heritage and it's really beautiful, that it gave them strength and a sort of hope for the future. And people really confirmed that to us. So yes, it is difficult to prove if you want, but if you look at really at when it's really going bad, then people really long for beauty, cultural heritage, aesthetics, and also enjoying it together. I think that's part of culture and part of the arts.
Could we expand a little bit on that cultural emergency response You know, my personal background is in disaster response, and even I was surprised to find out that this team of people existed back when I found out a couple of years ago. But you actually fund teams that will go in the case of natural disasters or war or political instability, and effectively rescue works of culture from museums and other institutions. Is that correct?
That's correct. But we don't send a team in. Our strength is that we always work with people on the ground. Those are the experts, and those are the people that really know the place, and those are the people that, you know what to do and, you know, speak the language, et cetera, et cetera. The problems, I remember that the first thing we did was rescuing a library in Baghdad because it was totally destroyed by a fire. Our problem was basically to get the money in, because the expert and the people that wanted to do something there, they were in place. The biggest problems were the bank were closed down and didn't function anymore. But basically, when we did something and still do something, because they're still doing great work there, they really work with the people on the ground. And that's also why it's so successful. And why that's also very important is that it becomes a social act or a social activity. So, for example, rescuing a mosque, from collapsing after a bomb or something. It's not only the experts and the constructors that come and help, but it's also the neighbors and the people that live there that, you know, they want to help. Yeah, and they really want that because it's their culture and it's their identity and it's their relevance of existence, so that's why it functions so well.
You're listening to Social Design Insights. We hope you're enjoying these thoughts from Els van der Plas of the Dutch National Opera and Ballet about the impacts of art and architecture. But we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, I'm going to be asking Els about the future of social design and its supporters. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more Social Design Insights after the break. Welcome back to Social Design Insights. We've been speaking with Els van der Plas of the Dutch National Opera and Ballet about cultural emergencies and the founding of the Prins Claus Fund. Coming up, we're going to start talking a bit about the future as I ask Els how she sees the fields of philanthropy and cultural support evolving. Let's rejoin the conversation. Over this sort of long arc since the inception of the fund to, let's say, the present day, what changes have you perceived in terms of the way that we evaluate the social value of art and architecture? I'm asking specifically because, you know, I would say last decade there was a heavy emphasis on, you know, Western practices, you know, going to some poor country, building a school or a hospital or something like that. Increasingly, it seems like we're turning inward to evaluate the social impact of, you know, our everyday activities. And perhaps that was led by the sustainability movement. Hopefully, my hope is that we're getting more conscientious about the social impact of what we do as designers and artists. What trends have you observed over this, let's call it two decades?
Well, I think there's several trends. One is, of course, that the art world opened up and became much more global, and people really talk to each other and write about each other and collect each other and make exhibitions together. So, because when we started in 1996, 1997 with the Prins Claus Fund, it was very rare to honor an artist from Mozambique. And my intention was also, if we honor him and we think he or she is great, he should also be in the Museum of Modern Art in New York, you know. So that link was for us very important. And that was at that time it was not done, basically. And when you visit now the Tate Modern, for example, you see artists from all over the world, which I really think is great. So I really enjoyed it. So I think the world became much more global. So that's one trend. And also the art world and the cultural world became much more global. So we exchange ideas and concepts and forms and designs, etc. And secondly, you're right that being more socially engaged, it is much more normal than before, luckily. But I think it has a reason that is not so nice, that because we think if we don't do it, you know, we're going to die or we're going to, I think it's something that there is a sort of urgency that wasn't felt before. I mean, the urgency was there, but it wasn't felt by the politicians and the people that had the money. And now they sort of feel that they should do something. So you could call it a trend, but it's also necessary, because if they don't do it, you know, their children will, or their grandchildren, will become the victims of their actions. So I think there is a bigger urgency. So that helps us to be more socially engaged and socially concerned and conscious. That is a big trend, and that changed a lot, because I was also director of the Institute for Design and Fashion in the Netherlands. And that was after the Prins Claus Fund, so around 2011. And that was really at that moment, you know, about food, and everything was really about that we should do it sustainable, etc. And now it's even more. So I think it's a trend that's also linked to the urgency that people realize if we don't do it, you know, we won't make it, basically. So those two trends sort of link up in a way.
So we're getting more socially conscious under penalty of death, basically.
Yes. I think that's it. And what you see, of course, is very terrible. That, for example, the right wing, they try to tell you the opposite. Had the Trumps and they try to say, you know, the climate change is not so bad, etc., etc. But I think if you look really deep down in people's hearts and minds, they don't believe that. So yeah, we are sort of at a turning point there.
Well, given that it's a turning point, and this may be a bit of a loaded question, but what do you see going forward as the role for institutions? And I ask because, again, you know, thinking about historically how this field has been shaped, you know, 20 years ago, you know, institutions like universities or like the fund, the Aga Khan Award, these sort of things played a very serious role, not only in recognizing it, but in calling people's attention to the fact that, one, these issues existed. Two, there were practitioners that were actively working on them. And as the work becomes more and more ubiquitous, it becomes more commonly understood that, okay, if I'm a designer or an artist, you know, my work intrinsically needs to have some dimension of social concern and sustainability. Do these institutions evolve? Are they playing the same role that they always have? Or are they going to switch to some other function that we don't understand yet?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think that there's a sort of erosion of institutions, which makes it very difficult to understand the future of institutions. Because if you look at how also designers work, for example, I remember that at Premslaan we had designers that really worked together in an open source on internet, and they really, you know, developed the product. I don't say they had everything worked out yet, but you saw that the institution was not important there anymore. They just did it. The role of institutions is interesting, because they're still there, of course, and they're still very active and powerful, but I wonder if you look at the world nowadays and how we communicate and how we get things done. Yeah, I'm very curious if that will stay that way. So that's one question for the future. And secondly, I'm convinced that institutions should be more responsible, if you want. And then I see politicians or politics or government also as an institution. And if I look at the Dutch government, you know, I think they don't use that responsibility. I think they really should give the right example to people, and I think they don't do that. They have a short-term policy. They don't really look into the future and take responsible measures. And then if you look at the media, for example, as a big institution internationally, I think they also could take up a role that is much more responsible. So I think they should do that, but I don't think they do. But so that I hope they will do that more in the future. But I don't hope it's going to be everything for me and myself and I in the future.
We're just going to have to commit, Els, to having part two and part three of this interview at maybe 5 and 10 year intervals, and just periodically check in and see if our dreams are coming to pass.
Yeah. You know, at the moment, I'm the director of the opera and the ballet in Amsterdam, the Dutch National Opera and Ballet. And for me, the big question is, if I look at performing arts, I'm actually an art historian, so I don't come from the performing arts. If I look at performing arts, I think, wow, you know, these people, like 300 to 400 people, make this great opera on stage, and these 1,600 people pay a ticket and they come and look. But I think, you know, if I think of the future of that, I think we will have a totally different concept of performing arts and enjoying that. And, you know, do we need theaters? You know, I don't know. So in a way, I think it will really, it will change. But I don't know how, but I'm very aware that it will change.
Els, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you was about the opera. And, you know, we kind of began talking about the arc of the Prince Claus Fund, but there's also, you know, the arc of you and your career and, you know, moving from the fund to the Institute for Design and Fashion to the National Opera and Ballet. How have those experiences been similar and how have they been different? And do you find different forms of advocacy there or different agendas or do you see it as a continuation of the same work? I mean, sorry for so many questions, but I'm extremely curious about how these things connect and form an arc.
Well, I started with the Gate Foundation, which focused totally on non-Western contemporary art, which at that time in 1987 was very rare, and it was not very, you know, logical to do that because all the museums and galleries and, you know, we're focusing on European and Western contemporary art. So then I became director of the Prins Claus Fund, which focused, of course, on art and culture in places in Latin America, Asia, and Africa. And after that, design and fashion, and now opera and ballet. If you look at opera and ballet, it's interesting because that's sort of the high art scene with lots of money and lots of people, and it's a big organization. The organization has 600 people, so it's big, it's slow, and they make great things. So if you look at that, it's interesting that I'm there now because I try, of course, to bring my engaged attitude, my wish for diversity, for inclusiveness in these big, in principle, white art traditions. So, of course, I use all that I have to change that because I think it's important if for example, the performing arts or opera and ballet have a life after 10 to 20 years, it's crucial that they change. So in that sense, for me, there is a line. Maybe you could say it's a bit the other way around. I began very socially engaged, small, et cetera, and very much with big impact, actually, small and big impact. And now I'm big with a smaller impact. So, so that's interesting. But I try, of course, to have a bigger impact in that organization. But because of the format and because of what it is, it's much, much more difficult, of course.
And what's next? You know, what does the future hold in terms of the continuation of this art? You've been at the opera since 2012.
Yes, right. I really started 1st of January 2013. Yeah, that was my real start. Yeah. I do it now for 6 years. And, when I look deep in my heart, I think I would love to go back to smaller organizations with bigger impact, because I think what we did with the Prins Claus Fund, and that was not big money, it was even with a smaller subsidy, you could really change a lot and mean a lot for people. When you look at the arts, for example, all the people that come to opera and ballet, I was this afternoon in the ballet performance of La Dame aux Camélias, which was great, very romantic, and people really enjoy it, and they they really go with it. So it's wonderful what you give to people, and that they have that afternoon with themselves and with their loved ones, and they have a great, great afternoon. And they go home with full of ideas and excitement. So I think that's great, and that's already something. That's what we started actually our conversation with, that beauty in itself or art in itself has already an impact. But in my heart, if you look at my personal belief, I think we are here on Earth also to do good, if you want. And that sounds terrible. But in a way, yes, I think if we can change a person or the world in a good way, I think we should do that. We should go for that, and I hope everybody would go for that. But if I look at myself, maybe I will go back to that.
I think we're going to adopt that as a motto for the show. If you're here on Earth, you should be doing something good. do you mind if we take that and take credit for it? Because I really like the way that it sounds.
Yeah, because then you can die, you know? You can die.
Yes, you can.
And because then you have, even if you did something small that was really good, I think it's already good.
Do small things with great love, right?
Yeah, exactly. Then your life has meaning.
Els, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing all these thoughts, and that last one in particular. I think that's going to stick with me and our listeners for a while. Given your experiences at the Fund and with the Opera and with the Institute for Design and Fashion, I just really wanted to get your perspective on this issue and hear your wisdom and share it with the audience.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Social Design Insights with Eric Kessel. I'd like to thank my guest of the week, Els van der Plas of the Dutch National Opera and Ballet, for all of her thoughts on the world of social design and her insights into how it's supported and continued. I hope all of you out there heed her advice and try and do some good stuff while you're here. To learn more about Els, the Dutch Opera, the Prins Claus Fund, and everything we covered on this show, please visit our website at curriestonefoundation.org. If you have any feedback on the show, ideas for guests, or just want to chat, you can always write to me at eric@socialdesigninsights.com. That's E-R-I-C at socialdesigninsights.com. Social Design Insights is produced by Brug Zeigner, and at the break, we were listening to Wie beginnen was by De Dijk from their album of the same name. And I'm hereby calling upon all of our Dutch listeners to write into the show and let me know how I did with that pronunciation, because I worked really hard at it. Social Design Insights is an initiative of the Curry Stone Foundation. And don't forget that Social Design Insights now has its own social media handles. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I promise to regularly post all of the new news about our guests, past, present, and future.